When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Freddie Sayers, and this is Unheard. Back in March, everyone's world suddenly changed.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
So on day one of lockdown, we launched Lockdown TV, a place where we could gather experts, scientists, writers, politicians, thinkers, to try to help us understand what was going on in this strange moment and what kind of world we were going to get at the end of it. And now, due to popular demand, here we are in podcast form. Welcome to Lockdown TV. Last Wednesday, 6th of January, we saw those crazy scenes on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. A lot of us are still trying to process what exactly that meant. How scared should we have been? And how profound was it as a historical event? Well, here to try and make sense of it with us, I'm delighted to say, is Andrew Sullivan, joining from Washington. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Freddie. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So let me just introduce you to those of our viewers who don't know. You are a famous columnist and writer and commentator. You started life as a sort of Catholic conservative, then managed to upset the Catholic conservatives by campaigning for gay marriage. You were then very anti-Hillary Clinton, which upset the establishment liberals, very pro-Obama, which upset the remaining conservatives you hadn't upset before, and then were very, very anti-Trump, which upset whoever was remaining after that. So pretty much you've upset everyone during the stellar last three decades. Is that a fair introduction?
Yes, I have been cancelled by every side many times, but I'm still attempting to make sense of things as far as I can.
Let me start by kind of giving you the credit here, because you were one of the commentators who, all the way back in 2016, when a lot of people said, well, Trump will change his behavior if he were to be elected, or even in the general election campaign, like all these kind of wackos, once they get near the trappings of power, they become more establishment. And you said, that's not going to happen. There are features in his character, which you saw early, which you said would ultimately lead us to something like what we saw last Wednesday. What was it that you saw back then?
Well, he is instinctually, and always has been, the classical definition of a tyrant. Now, people don't like that word because it implies that America is a tyranny. That wasn't my point. My point was that that is who he is. He has no capacity psychologically to live in a world with equals or to engage in what I would call a non-zero-sum engagement. He's psychologically unwell. He's been this way his whole life. If you read his biography before he was elected, it was quite clear this is who he was. No understanding of the Constitution, and fundamentally no ability to concede anything, to give up, to bargain in a way that would benefit both sides. So he was almost the antithesis of the character needed in a liberal democracy. And so I really believe that he would squelch the energy and the essence of liberal democracy, which requires give and take, reason, and a certain amount of restraint and moderation. So I always regarded him, and I have consistently regarded him, as a threat to the Constitution and the United States and indeed to the world. And I was terrified this was going to happen at any point. This was always going to happen if he was ever checked. And it was also clear from the 2016 campaign, where he said he would not abide by the result if he lost. First time in American history that that has been said before an election. And clearly this year said that he was not going to abide by an election result if he lost. And is still claiming, a president, a former president of the United States, that he lost, that he won this in a landslide. So this is an insane person. So it's someone out of his mind.
You definitely get the credit here on forecasting that he would refuse to accept defeat, that he would show very little respect for the institutions around the democratic system, that he would never stop and would take it as far as it could possibly go. All of those things happened. But what didn't happen, at least with 10 days left or so of his presidency, what has not happened is the squelching of liberal democracy, as you put it. It looks, touch wood, like liberal democracy has survived. Could one maybe say that you were right in terms of what his character would lead to and what he would sort of be motivated towards, but actually that the institutions and the democracy itself were stronger than you thought?
No, I don't. I think that when 147 members of Congress, a majority of your own party in the House of Representatives, vote to decertify the legitimate, tested results of a general election, then it's much deeper. When the possibility of even a discourse in the country that relies upon the same set of facts has disappeared, which is also part of liberal democracy, I don't retract a word. When I see the public debate, for example, of what's happening now with the constraining of the internet by the big tech companies, I would say absolutely this is what was going to happen, because we don't have a liberal democracy. Maybe I need to explain what I mean by that,
yeah.
Which is that it is one in which both parties accept the success or failure of each other. If they lose, there's next time. It's a place in which you can have a public discourse in which different views are treated as equally to be respected and to be engaged. America's gone way past that. And the rhetoric that the entire system is illegitimate, that the entire electoral system is a massive fraud, that it's manipulated, the democracy is absurd. Millions of people were disenfranchised, according to Trump. And when that is believed by a majority of his own party, supported by a majority of the people in the House of Representatives of his own party, including originally, I think, around 11 senators, and it declined around 8, including people who thought their future depended on this. No, it's catastrophic. He's destroyed an unbelievable amount of trust that makes a democracy work.
Let's just kind of rewind a few days, because it's so, I think those crazy hours where people were rampaging around the Capitol are the ones that we will be trying to understand for quite a while. Personally, I definitely saw them, and there were times when I thought, wow, this is a coup, or this something really very serious is happening. And then I guess already in the hours of the following morning, when we discovered that the famous horned character was actually an out-of-work actor, where a lot of the people taking photos themselves in Pelosi's office were kind of known alt-right internet characters, the kind of performative aspect of it became clearer. And actually, this wasn't the storming of the Bastille. This wasn't tens of thousands of people with pitchforks overpowering the security. It was a mob of a lot of slightly kind of ironic, lost, weird people, which was something quite different to a kind of full insurrection, as the word that people keep using. Did you feel that as well?
I think that is one aspect of it I wouldn't deny. There was something almost comic. But they were, many had arms. Two IEDs were placed at the RNC and the DNC. They were yelling, "Hang Mike Pence." The members of Congress had to be rushed out of the building. People died. Do not minimize this, for God's sake. I mean, this is what they've been doing. Not you, but the media's been doing, and conservatives have been doing from the get-go, which is attempting not to see what is in front of your face. They planned it. They wanted to take over. They had ties to hold people hostage. They were calling to kill people. Now, look, it's a crazy bunch of people. It will span a range of loonies. But this was an armed group. They were professionals. The cops will tell you they knew how to siege this. They had a plan. Now, whether they had anything that could possibly have succeeded, but you only need one gun. And I think that when you have that level of arms and that number of people surrounding the entire representative body of the United States, Senate and House at that point, where the President of the United States has told them that Mike just told them that their only hope of overturning the election, again, this was specifically designed for a specific date, January 6th, when the certification finally takes place. I just don't know how you say that was just a circus.
So I just want to be clear. I just want to be clear here. I'm not minimizing it. I don't think it was just a circus, but I think it was very grave. And as you say, people died, and this was a major event that we should take very, very seriously. I also think it's important to observe the difference between what happened on Wednesday and a genuine armed insurrection or equivalent. I mean, and for me, that's
what would be the difference?
Well, for me, it's instructive, because actually it has something of the flavor of Trump generally, which is there is this slightly kind of incompetent aspect to it. You know, your sort of worst fears in 2016 would have been realized more effectively had the tyrant, as you call him, been a better tyrant. You know, and we over here in Europe, we look at Viktor Orban as a far more competent person who believes some of the same things, but is much more skilled at gradually eroding institutions, but of retaining power. And here we have someone who, in a kind of chaotic way, is going to be out in a few days' time. And I just wonder, what can we learn from that?
No, well, the worst version that we feared would be a dictator with martial law on the streets. But that isn't really what I feared. And that isn't really what I was saying. Tyrants are a psychological force. They rarely, and if you look at Aristotle, Plato, or you look at Shakespeare, you realize that tyrants don't necessarily succeed in establishing tyrannies. Many of them are so out of control of themselves, so compelled by their own desires, that all they do is destroy. Look at what this man has managed to destroy. He's not competent enough to build anything, but he is capable of destroying more effectively than anyone the very legitimacy of the entire system, saying that the election results of a liberal democracy are utterly fake and controlled by his enemies. He's destroyed any possibility of a shared empirical narrative. He has governed by exhibiting complete contempt for the Congress, wouldn't even send a single member of his executive branch to testify, just to testify. Has broken the law, has obstructed justice, has got away with all of it, has bled the government dry for his own personal enrichment, and is not done. We keep thinking, oh, this is over. It is not over when the leader of the opposition party continues to insist that the previous election was fundamentally illegitimate, and that therefore armed insurrection is the only. I mean, think of it from what he believes. If it's true that the entire election system has been rigged, the biggest fraud in the history of the United States, that people are in control of the election system, and there's nothing you can do about it, of course you're going to engage in armed insurrection. You absolutely should.
Should we take any, do you take any confidence then from the fact that of all of the other bodies within the body politic that might have supported him to get him over the line and actually doing something to obstruct this election result, everything from the lower courts up to the Supreme Court, governors who might have done tricks about rejecting electors, larger parts of the Congress, and ultimately even the vice president, none of them went with him. So actually, is it not observable that, you know, the Constitution and it wasn't quite as fragile as we had feared? Thank God.
Brad Raffensperger saved the Republic in many ways. But
this is the Georgia,
but he's the secretary, he's the guy in charge of certifying the results in Georgia, right. Who resisted what we now know was a phone call instructing him to find the requisite number of votes to overturn an election. The danger was that Trump has created a cult within a party that could never disagree with him. And he tried, and we don't know the full extent of this yet, to get the state legislators completely in his thrall to fix certain results to prevent certification. So he tried to use every lever he could to reverse an election result. Now, some of these people in the state legislature supported him, and there was considerable support. If it had been a narrower win, if he'd had a single shred of credibility, and then there always are mistakes in elections. But remember also, we've had 60 lawsuits to test fraud. All of them failed, and they still went for this. You think also of so yes, I do think in the end, depending on what happens, we don't know what's going to happen now. There are a lot of arms in the country, and Inauguration Day is going to be another stress test of whether this place is going to survive civil conflict. But if I told you in 2016 that, I did tell you in 2016, I said, there's no way this man is going to leave office voluntarily. There will never be a peaceful transition of power with this person. We haven't got there yet. He's still in charge of the nuclear arsenal. He's still calling the shots as the commander in chief. But if I had, if I had given you that scenario 5 years ago, you would have said, oh, stop being so stupid, Andrew. Don't be so hysterical. You're being a big drama queen. And I am a drama queen at times. I just think a person like him with his skills, his extraordinary demagogic talent, the grip he has on an already radicalized Republican Party, this is a very close run thing. And we don't know what's going to happen on Inauguration Day, nor afterwards. He's going to be running an insurgency of some sort.
Which leads me to the other side of this, which is we've had this test, stress test, and how close we think it came to really becoming a sort of disaster, people will take different views about. But it's what seems to me, you mentioned the banning of Donald Trump on Twitter and other social media platforms. What's now in process, 10 days before a new administration, is a kind of fight back from the, I guess, establishment liberal component to say, okay, you took it too far. We were really frightened by this. We are now going to obliterate the kind of memory of Donald Trump. We are going to try and remove him entirely and use all of the power, which is considerable, that they have to do that. Are you also anxious that they might overdo it and make things worse in the kind of the revenge moment?
Yes, because that has been the essential core dynamic all along. And that, if unless you grasp that, if you're able to see the danger of that radicalization, which is has this sick relationship with the radicalization on the right. Again, we've had 4 years of this crazy person. And the Republicans gained last time around. And there is an appeal to this kind of person, of this kind of person to people. But yes, I think
and
there
what is
a danger.
Let me just pick up on that, because having heard everything you've said about him so far, and you then observe that pretty much half the country voted for him, what do you now understand to be that appeal?
What it's always been, the appeal of every authoritarian leader, especially one given the classic lost cause narrative, fighting for the soul of America, which has been taken over by these evil moderns, racial panic, cultural panic, moral panic. When you add all the external factors in, and if you have any understanding of history, you can see exactly why such a person would appeal. And if he'd been halfway competent and without COVID, I think he would have been reelected. And now we can see exactly the kind of person we would have reelected and the powers he then would have done. I mean, he's gotten away with absolutely everything in the last 4 years, including conspiring with a foreign government to intervene into the domestic elections with Ukraine.
I'm trying to get you to meditate on what the legitimate aspects of his appeal were. If one can kind of see past the sort of haze of all of that. You know, and actually that's one thing where you've been really good, unlike a lot of people who've been really upset about Trump. You have always been saying that there were legitimate concerns about immigration. There were concerns about the globalized economy not working. There were a lot of things that were sort of connected to his platform that people were right to be upset about.
Yes, this is the tragedy of it. Yes, that he brought attention to subjects and issues that really the elites had completely ignored because they could. And the question of the implosion of the middle class economy, the question of immigration, of trade, and indeed of such swift demographic change that it really destabilizes the entire idea of a coherent nation state. All these things are absolutely valid. Equally, what happened last summer when people let the cities of the United States burn because of another large conspiracy theory, that of white supremacy, which was operating on the left. He, as often happens, the radicalization of one side radicalizes the other. I think Trumpism and an adjustment of conservatism towards the needs of the working class is a great move, but you just can't separate the two, unfortunately. You can't. And he is so uniquely dangerous and irrational that there was never a way. And he didn't. He's barely had any impact on these things. And in fact, he has forever stigmatized, for example, the argument for immigration control, because he's a raging, crazy-ass bigot and xenophobe. And he's stamped those arguments now with the allure of a kind of authoritarian, I'm not going to use the F word, but a kind of personality cult. The question now, I think, Freddie, is how do cults stop? That's what we've been dealing with. This is a cult, a very large and powerful cult, given legitimacy from the very core symbols of American government, the White House. And cults, you know, they often end with the leader's suicide or a sudden eruption of massive sexual abuse or mass suicide even. Some kind of expurgation of this mind control they've been under. And maybe, you know, this is one of those moments when the cult, where the dog catches the car and they're there in the Capitol and they are as angry and as hateful and as dangerous as they are completely bewildered.
Don't cults sometimes just run out of money as well? I mean, is there no chance, do you think, that the sort of allure and the power of Donald Trump will be surprisingly reduced by the events of this week, by the fact that he no longer will have the office, and that we perhaps in 12 months' time will be surprised at what a kind of fringe character he's suddenly become, and we might look back on this conversation as unnecessarily pessimistic?
Well, yes, we could. Absolutely. COVID-19 could disappear tomorrow, too. Anything could happen. But I think you might think of the alternative, which is that in fact, he is much more suited to be a president in exile, to be sitting somewhere in the United States claiming to be the legitimate.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
President of the United States, who actually won a landslide, who at that point doesn't have to run the government, not that he was running the government anyway, whose words do not have any real consequences in the world except for marshalling an opposition. This is his dream position, actually. He never wanted to actually do the business of the presidency. So we have a rival pope, as it were. And huge influence. And the way that now that the government is going to be run by the Democrats in the House, Senate, and White House, and the left is going to be licking its lips at what it might be able to do now and exploiting this situation. And you ask yourself, who out there rivals Trump in an ability to control these people? I don't see anyone. I see a Republican Party that could radicalize even further. And you also have this dangerous and scary narrative of the stab in the back narrative, which has always been the classic tool of the far right. You know, they robbed us, stole it, and he's still the president. So you take the not my president problem, which you've had now for quite a while, to a much more dangerous level. Now, I hope maybe his insanity is further exposed. But I don't think this is over. I live 10 blocks away from there. And, you know, people are having serious conversations about whether to leave the Capitol for the inauguration because it's not secure. There are serious questions about to what extent the U.S. Capitol Police, for example, who were completely unprepared for this, there are questions about whether law enforcement is fully kosher at this point. They're part of society. Trump has bragged openly in the past about when push comes to shove, I have the police and I have the military. They voted for me. And this is the level of insanity we're at, Freddie. It's You can look at it as a circus. We're living in it.
What is so sad about this is that, as you say, there were legitimate grievances. And in a sort of big picture sense, the disruption of 2016 can be seen as a kind of necessary creative destruction, in that it exposed the things that weren't working and it prevented an order from ossifying into a different kind of tyranny. And then here we are 4 years later, and the guys who are now going to take charge, which will be the Democrats, are now so frightened and rattled and so on the back foot from the last 4 years that they may make the situation even worse by being overly heavy-handed against this perceived threat. So where...
Yes.
What can we look to for wisdom here?
In some ways it comes down to Biden. You know, Biden as not associated with the rising, emerging forces on the left, who is associated with what one can see now as a rather moderate president in Obama, who himself has been pretty much a centrist. I don't know. I don't think that Biden is strong enough to recast the Democratic Party in a way that could address these issues. You're going to see a very early test on immigration, where Biden has already said, all those things I said I would do on day one are now going to be postponed 6 months because they're having intelligence of a massive wave of new immigration coming from the South. Because they basically said, come on in. So we could have all sorts of more destabilizing events. The question is, if Biden has the energy, strength, and authority to control the left, now he might have a couple of ways of doing it. He could appeal, and there will be a lot of, I think, appeal to a normal president who isn't in our heads every second of the day and scaring the shit out of us. He's also going to have the benefit of coming in as the vaccination process accelerates, one hopes, and a subsequent boom that's going to happen, the demand built up. So he's going to have a huge economic recovery. And if he plays it right, I think he has a chance to stabilize. I don't think, if I would push up against the wall and ask what I think will happen, I don't think he's capable of it.
What he's been talking about in the past few days, you know, we're now talking about domestic terrorism. He seems quite lively on the idea of clamping down on the dangers that he perceived this past week. We've seen this extraordinary concerted purge by the technology companies, from Twitter through to, you know, Apple and Google forbidding Parler, which was the alternative, right through to Shopify. I mean, who knew that Shopify was into censoring customers? But he's been removed from the Shopify list. You can't buy merchandise. I mean, that seems quite frightening to me, that, you know, an incoming administration married to an incredibly powerful tech platform. I mean, is that the new thing we're going to need to be fighting against for the next few years?
Yes, and it will be empowered by the fact that a genuine and principled and moderate defense of conservatism has forever in this country now been tainted with the forces of anarchy, sedition, and racism. I mean, that's the truth. They win. If one wants to resist wokery, as it were, then we're already up against it now. I mean, and Trump is partly a lot responsible for that. And that's why I was always, those who were backing Trump to stop wokeness have no idea that maybe in due course there will be a fight back. But we're under assault now from an assailant left that, God help me, Trump has empowered, legitimized, and validated, and that may well succeed. So that's, you know, that's the worst case scenario. I'm always a catastrophist. But yeah, I think there will be resistance. I bet you the Republicans will win back the House next time. Unless Biden pulls off a miracle, you know, unless Biden is able to do this. But I, you know, I pray to God, you know, I'm going to support this guy as by far the least worst option that Americans now have. And hope to God he doesn't completely capitulate to the left. But I don't see much signs of that. I mean, we now have a huge problem in America. It's called Donald J. Trump. He's not defeated. He's a crazy person. He's going to keep delegitimizing the government of the United States.
Your view is that he should be impeached? Is that that's what you've been pushing for, I've seen on Twitter? That's your position? There should be a...
Should be impeached within a few days and removed. Yes.
Chances of that happening?
30%, maybe, I would say. At this point, hard to tell. I'm not in touch with the mood on the Hill. But there's nothing like having to crouch behind your desk as a Republican congressperson in case someone comes in and shoots you. That will concentrate the mind. But there are risks to all of this, Freddie. That's the problem.
But in that scenario, you're not worried that it, you know, you painted this lively picture of the kind of president in exile, the Pope in Avignon as opposed to the Pope in Rome. If he's been impeached, it's like being kind of expelled on your last day. It gives you a sort of, presuming he's not actually in prison, that would then enable him to...
The act of impeachment does one important thing. It prevents him from ever running for office again, which is huge. Otherwise, he's the Pope in exile, amassing his forces for another takeover.
You're not worried that gives additional allure? You know, there's lots of examples in history of people,
yes,
leaders in prison or who are not able to run for office, who are still controlling their party, and they then have a kind of client candidate. Might that...
Yes, it's the Bonaparte problem. It's what do you do afterwards with this person who still commands massive loyalty, who is still asserting a really extraordinary charge, who is a symbol that the entire system of government is illegitimate, and who has sent out signals to every far-right white nationalist terror group in the country to support him. And we could have a wave of domestic terrorism from these people. The only way out of this is for Trump to say, I was wrong, I imagined all this, I concede the election, go home, look at the policies I tried, rebuild on those, and do so with my blessing. I mean, again, he could have done that.
I mean, he could have done that if he was a different person.
Yes.
This is why I think it's urgent. Like, is there still not an opportunity for the Democrats? They are the ones coming in. He is the one going out. You know, you talked about Joe Biden. At the moment, Joe Biden is talking about domestic terrorism, and there's moves to impeach and all of that. Wouldn't it be amazing if he did the opposite thing and now said to everyone who voted for Donald Trump, I understand what you're upset about. There were things we got wrong. We have not been perfect in this. And actually reach across to them instead of further demonizing them, which is just going to push them further away.
I think he will. I do think that inauguration speech will reach out to them. I've no doubt about it. And he actually is one of the few to get it in a way from his background. He's not educated in the Ivy League. He comes from white working class Irish American background. He was born in Scranton, which is sort of, you know, an incredibly important part of red America now. So the Democrats, at least their voters, were wise to pick him. And I think he will try. And he may succeed. It's going to be an incredibly hard thing. And I would say this also, that I think he's conducted himself with this entire year, this past year, very well. I don't think he's inflamed things much. I mean, he has to take some sort of stand. I thought his speech on Wednesday was right, struck the right note. I think he genuinely wants to bring people together. I think that the Republican senators, the non-cynical and non-crazy ones, may understand that helping him rebalance the regime, as it were, will be important. So there is an opening. I just don't know how his base is going to tolerate just that. But it's possible. And there were no other candidate could even begin to do that other than Biden. And taking down the racial rhetoric, taking down the illegitimacy rhetoric, taking down all this rhetoric, dialing it all the way down with the combination of renewed economy and a declining epidemic, and we may get to calmer waters. That's my prayer and my hope. It's also possible the Republican Party really is over, that it will fracture, it has to fracture, that the rump know-nothing part of it will be in permanent exile, and that Trump's legacy will be the cementation of a kind of left liberal orthodoxy in America that will never loosen its grip. That will be his legacy.
When I talked about the kind of incoming regime married to the tech giants, now kind of saying, right, you had your rebellion, we are now going to stamp you out. That was sort of what I had in mind, what the sentence you just said of a kind of left liberal orthodoxy that is now unassailable.
Yeah, it could be the case. I do think that inciting specific violence against specific people is something that should get you banned. I'm a free speech absolutist, but I'm sorry. No one has the right to say that. And that is what Trump was doing and could do in the future. But yes.
I mean, you'll see, guarantee in the comments underneath this, what people will say is, show me the tweet where Donald Trump incited violence against an actual specific person. That's what they'll be saying. When did he do that?
He said, I can't repeat a tweet out of the top of my head, but he was tweeting, for example, that Mike Pence has the ability to win the quote unquote win the election for us and betrayed them. He told them to go to the Hill right now. He told them, you can't be weak, you gotta be tough.
Stops one step short of directly inciting violence against the person.
Refusing to authorize the National Guard to put this down. It had to be done by Pence an hour and a half later. I mean, we're going to find out. I think his phone should be impounded, and we should see what he was doing during the uprising. If you want to play legal scholar on that, you can. Okay, go ahead. Tell me where. At what point are these conservatives going to recognize what's in front of them and stop excusing this stuff? It's insane that people will find any excuse for this person. I'm sorry, I am exhausted. There is no fucking way to justify this person in any fashion, of any way, whatever the cause. This is an unbelievable breach in American history and in the West. It's a huge blow beneath the waterline of Western democracy, fomented by this person, and people are asking me to prove it? I mean, text and verse? I mean, look at the last 4 years. Has he ever tried to hold the system together? Has he ever not tried to blow it further apart? Has he done anything which isn't about him rather than the country as a whole? I mean, maybe it takes living here. I don't know. It's different. But this has been an ordeal.
Well, that's your... If there are comments saying that, well, you've just answered them there. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Let me try and kind of get you to conclude slightly here. I mean, viewing, you know, we're over here in London. We've got our own stuff to worry about. We're in the middle of a pandemic and everyone is very anxious about a lot of things. And yet, it's so hard to find voices in America that are interested in calming things down or in trying to see a way through. I totally respect you as someone who is an independent thinker who is not a kind of driven partisan, but you're also very upset. And it's just, if everyone is so inflamed, how can there be wisdom at a crucial moment like this?
Well, I think that it's the job of people like me to continue to argue that Biden, for example, should be accepted, that to urge him to govern from the center, to urge everyone to take the temperature down. It is it has been very hard. We've had this person who's clearly out of his mind, running the country for 4 years, turning everybody crazy. I mean, it's like, I've always said, it's like, you know, living in a house where one family member has mental illness. Everybody in the end has mental illness. He's been doing this to the country now consistently from the biggest platform for 4 to 5 years in ways that have been designed to frighten, disorient, enrage. And he has been a genius at it. And he also mastered the new media in order to do this. And he has prompted this horrifying response from the left, which is essentially another attack upon constitutional principles and individual rights with the entire wave of wokeism. So how am I not supposed to be upset? Do you really want me to sit here? I mean, of course, there are times when we should be upset. There are times when rage is the right response, as long as it's done peacefully. I how do we unwind it? I don't know. Maybe Biden can help. Maybe a desire to get past all this will help. Maybe the end of the epidemic will lead to a different mood in some ways. Sometimes a clash like this, a really horrible scene, can clarify things. You know, it's like a physical abuser can one time go a little too far and suddenly recognize, man, I could have killed her. And that could force that person to just like, okay, what did I do here? Do I have to stop this?
You know, when you say those words, do you believe them? I mean, do you think that's going to happen? I mean, often I ask our guests to conclude with whether they feel hopeful or not. I think we will all have got the impression that you don't feel especially hopeful. What kind of chances are there that what you just described happens?
Well, America's had some pretty crazy, divisive times in the past. I mean, one looks back to the 70s when there were bombs going off every week all over the place, where the whole country had been torn apart, where it was the middle of a cultural revolution and impeached president. And yet within a few years, it was morning in America and Reagan was back and things calmed down. And then we had this almost Elysian period of neoliberal triviality, the Seinfeld era, really, which then imploded with 9/11 and all the questions that resolved. I think so hope is absolutely valid. And the experience is that over the long run, I mean, this country is unlike any other modern country, has in its modern history had an unbelievably brutal civil war. It's a volatile, young, restless republic that can still evolve in ways that are scary. And I do think that the mass immigration of the last 50 years has pushed it culturally, along with the sexual and the feminist revolution, to a point of extreme stress of continuity and coherence that conservatives should be concerned about. But at the same time, it's a very big country. People could leave where they've been. The epidemic is going to, if history is any guide, the epidemic is going to reorder things in all sorts of interesting and different ways. I think people can get also exhausted by conflict at some point, just exhausted by it. And especially when you see how miserable it makes everybody, just how much bloody psychological pain has been in this country for this long, partly driven constantly by him, but also by the crazies on the left. Historically, the amount of violence has not been as great as in the 70s. So let me put it this way. I am not optimistic, but I am hopeful. And I don't know the path or the course of the next year or two. But at some point, we have so much to lose by blowing this country up. And that people will understand that, I think do understand it. And some of this is a form of cosplay. Some of it is some sort of surreal performativity. But the guns were loaded and the house was broken into. And the president is still insisting the cause was just.
I'm going to take that because I feel that your note there of maybe not optimism, but hope is is a note that I'm going to take with me. I think that's a good place for us to be right
Absolutely.
Now. And I think what you've said will give everyone watching just a sense of the gravity of it and what it's felt like for someone who's so kind of intellectually engaged with it, to have lived in the center of it for the last few years.
Yeah, Freddie, we're only human. And, you know, and people say I have derangement syndrome or whatever, but, you know, I love this. I love this country. And he's fucking taken a flamethrower to it. And there comes a point at which you have to say, I don't care, get rid of him, get him out of here. I think if we had Elba, we should put him on it.
Elba, that's the island where we put Napoleon, right?
Sorry, I'm desperate. He's driven me crazy. I am beyond the emotions that have pulsed through everybody on all sides in this country for like 4 years are just exhausting. And on top of an epidemic, I mean, it's this. At some point, it hits such a bottom. It's gotta get a little better.
Andrew Sullivan, thank you for your thoughts. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Freddie.
That was Andrew joining us from Washington, D.C., right in the heart of the action. You heard that he feels understandably very passionately about this, and these are momentous times. So we will be watching very closely what happens in coming days and months. Thanks to him for his insights. Don't forget, you can watch all of our podcast interviews on our YouTube channel. Find us under Unheard and make sure to subscribe for all the latest. Thanks for joining.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.